New York State Education Commissioner John King released a statement on Friday lamenting the mass shooting at Sandy Hook Elementary School in Connecticut. King said, quote, "Our schools are meant to be safe havens where children can learn free from fear and violence." Ken Slentz is Deputy New York State Education Commissioner in the Office of P-12 Education and joins us in Studio A to discuss what is being done now and which should be done in the future to keep our schools safe. Ken, thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
No, my pleasure, Joe.
Also, we welcome Mary Granzciallo, Executive Director of the New York State Center for School Safety. Mary, thank you very much for being here as well.
Thank you.
Let us begin with you, Ken, and give us a sense of, on a day like today, I assume, because we talked to a school superintendent from Queensbury earlier, about what is being done in schools across the state and across the nation, which has a lot to do with going through policy and figuring out where things can be tightened up and what can be done and are we doing enough?
Yeah, I mean, today the policy work is in the background. What's happening with educators in our region, in our state, and certainly across the country, they're taking care of the kids today. They're making sure that the kids are feeling safe. There are a tremendous number of questions, difficult questions from the youngest children on up that are going to be asked. You know, these are things as educators that we think a lot about, we train a lot about, and you dread the questions that are coming today. You dread the situation that's presenting itself today. So yes, no question, folks are looking at their policy and protocols, but first and foremost, they're making sure that the kids are feeling safe and as comfortable as possible today.
I read in an introduction when we were talking about school safety and when we were talking specifically about the school in Newtown that By all accounts, and we may learn more as time goes on, it seems like they did everything right.
Yeah,
they did everything right, and they had the lockdown. They had their policy posted. They had input from the community. The kids knew what to do. The teachers knew what to do. The administrators knew what to do, and yet here we are.
Yeah, the behavior of all involved, the adults, the kids, so remarkably admirable. For what they did and those teachers and the principal and the psychologists that sacrificed themselves was just amazing. This is why we train as we do. This is why it's so important to take those drills seriously. But at the end of the day, the most dangerous weapon that was on the school campus that day was not in the form of a gun. It was in the form of that young man's mind and what his intent was. He intended to do harm. He went into that building through a very atypical means, things that any plan, no matter how solid, it couldn't defend against that. So, unfortunately, these are things that you can't plan for, that you can't train for in the instant. What we can plan and train for is how that weapon was developed over the course of 20 years. What are things that we should look for in our youngest kids that give us those signals that something's not right, that they need help, they need guidance from the adult community, from the professional organizations, to make sure that we don't experience this, as the president suggested last night, that this doesn't become routine, that we actually take a much stronger focus on prevention and intervention.
Mary Granzciallo is Executive Director of the New York State Center for School Safety. Mary, before we talk about the issue at hand, give us a sense of how you work with the New York State Education Department in helping districts become safer.
Certainly. Thank you. The New York State Center for School Safety has been in existence since 1997, and we started initially working in more of the prevention arena with after-school programs, and then worked intensively with the governor's office during the time of the initiation of the school safety law, which became SAVE. At that time, we started working very directly with the State Education Department to help support schools in their planning process of implementing the SAVE legislation. We really take a public health approach to what it is we do. We look at a combination of three prongs of how do we implement policy that is in place, how do we think about prevention, and then how do we change systems to be safer environments, incorporating all of those things Ken has just spoken about. We will respond to crises in the field as they occur on the directive of the state agency. So if something is happening in a community and someone in the state education department asks us to intervene and to provide support, we will do that with the school. We also do a review on behalf of the state education department of those schools that are defined as persistently dangerous, those for which there are high numbers of violent incidents that occur, looking at a combination of both their facilities, what is it about their building structures, their social-emotional climate and their environment that really might contribute to an environment that may be a little more unsafe. We also look at all of the documents that determine all of those planning pieces in place that Ken has mentioned. Our schools have done an incredible amount of planning, as did the school in Connecticut, and a lot of work in practicing what it is they need to do in the event of a crisis occurring. And oftentimes things happen that we, in retrospect, look back and say we are really in a much better position than we might have been had those things not happened and had we not taken care of that. So we really work to help schools in that process of what they're doing. Prevention, of course, is a big piece. Thinking also about the system and the entire system of how we interact as adults with young people in our encountering in each day. And as Ken said, the most important thing now, as people are doing today, is it's about the kids, it's about the relationships, it's about what it is we need to be in doing caretaking with our young people.
And you are housed at the State University of New Paltz?
No, we're housed at Ulster BOCES in New Paltz. We are functioning
Ulster
on
BOCES.
Behalf of the state, so we cover both New York City and all of the upstate area and Long Island as well. And we are based in New Paltz at the Ulster BOCES campus.
And Ken, how do you work with both this New York State Center for School Safety and I assume other organizations in implementing what it is that you want to implement when it comes to the overall umbrella issue of school safety?
Yeah, the Center for School Safety provides technical assistance to all of our districts. We have 697 school districts and 37 BOCES that we work with.
Man.
The BOCES really are key components to this. The district superintendents are an administrative arm of the commissioner in the field, so we have a direct relationship with them. Many of them have health and safety offices that really focus on this work. So we actually have direct communication both with the district superintendents at BOCES and with all of our superintendents on what's expected, best practices, the technical components around each of the plans. And again, whenever we update those plans, as we've done in the last couple of years, making sure that not only is there familiarity and awareness of that, but also that the technical assistance is there, both through our Center for School Safety as well as those BOCES offices.
We spoke to Dr. Douglas Hundley, who is a superintendent at Queensbury School District, Union Free School District, earlier today, and we had the discussion about what of how you make changes, and yet you don't overreact, and it seems to me that is a real challenge and the hardest thing of what you all have to do.
Yeah, it's a tremendous challenge, and Doug was one of the superintendents that this weekend sent a message out to all of his parents, a voice message out to all of his parents, assuring them that the district was taking this very seriously, that they were in fact going to look at their plans, that they were in fact going to be comforting and supporting the kids as they came back to school on Monday. But the key point, Joe, as you said, not to overreact on this. We want to make sure that we apply the lessons learned. We want to make sure, as you suggested, that we acknowledge that the practice and the training that the folks in Newtown went through worked to the greatest extent that it could under the circumstances, making sure that we are all aware, all of the adults in the education community and the larger community, that we take those plans seriously and that we take those practices and the trainings seriously, that the drills are not seen as just a nuisance, but they in fact can save lives. And I think that's very real to many of us now. So having both the district leadership, the community leadership come together, either directly or even with our assistance, to make sure that those lessons learned are applied appropriately within those plans, that's what you'll see happening. And I think you have superintendents like Doug Huntley who will take a very measured approach to this that ensure first and foremost that those kids are safe when they come into school each day.
Mary, when when this happened on Friday morning and we found out and it started to unfold Friday afternoon, and we look at today where we've had a weekend to sort of absorb as to what happened, how did this change your day in the sense of what you are doing right now, what you were doing today that would have been different had this not happened?
cleared the calendar so that I would be available in the office, as did all the staff at the New York State Center for School Safety. Whatever we had scheduled was canceled for today so that we could provide updates in all forms of social media, whether it was on the website, on our Facebook page, any pieces of where we needed to share information that would be useful to schools who are looking for those quick pieces that they could refresh their memories on how to respond to issues such as this when children are facing a moment of crisis. Also, just being available on the phone for any particular calls that we may get, any experiences that people may be having if they're struggling and they just want to run something by and have a conversation with someone. So pretty much we cleared the calendar to be available to people today. And that's generally in a crisis what we will do. If it's something, of course, within our state, we may be on site at the moment, but generally we're working with schools beforehand to prepare their kind of their pre-planning, and then afterwards when they're going back to return to normalcy in the situation of a crisis.
You know, Ken, we so often hear of the term of at-risk students, at-risk districts that we kind of expect things to happen where quote-unquote trouble is brewing. And then we look at this elementary school in Connecticut where if you had to pick the school that was not going to be targeted, this was going to be the one because, again, everything's in place, everything is very quiet, and we're talking about an elementary school, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
So, which brings up the question, no matter how much you plan, and no matter how much we put into this, you can, and we used this word earlier in the program, there is no such thing as a failsafe, is there?
No. When you are up against a mind that has bad intentions, the best of plans is challenged. And this is where, in his letter to districts on Friday, the commissioner used a particular word that is really important. Remain vigilant.
Right.
You know, the typical visitor that we see come into our hallways in school districts, the typical upset student, how are we responding to them differently this week based on what happened? It absolutely goes to show, Joe, that again, these drills, these plans are put into place for a reason, because we can no longer predict. We haven't been able to predict where events like this are going to happen. So maintaining that vigilance, maintaining that constant care over our kids, engaging perhaps in different ways now in light of this tragedy, how we engage the full community in these plans and in these practice drills, making sure that at home parents are talking to the kids about what this could look like, what the drill means, why it's necessary to take it seriously. But again, I think, as you'll see in every district in New York State today, every district arguably across the country, they're posing these same situations. Where are we now exposed where we perhaps thought we wouldn't be before, in our youngest, with our youngest children in our lowest grades, making sure that now those folks, the adults in those buildings, are ever more vigilant relative to the plans and training that they've been through.
As I stated at the beginning of the program, our goal today was to try to tackle as many of the facets of this problem and of these issues that emerge from what happened on Friday. And I think if we start to put it all together, we have heard in the segments that we have dedicated to the issue of guns, is, and we just heard this from Adam Winkler, is, and from the president last night, the time is now to take action when it comes to those particular issues regarding guns. So I ask you, and Mary, I'll get your response from this in a moment, but I ask you as the Deputy Commissioner of the New York State Department of Education, is now the time to act on a statewide level as well to act quickly, to engage the citizenry of this state as well as its elected leaders to do something more than what we're doing?
You know,
because I can't imagine you don't have a laundry list of things you would like to do.
Sure, sure. And we spent quite a bit of time this weekend developing that laundry list, but in the spirit of not overreacting and being very thoughtful about our approach to this, one recurring theme was with me, and that the guns that were used were the secondary weapon.
Right.
For this young man. His mind and his intention was the first weapon that, again, had been developed over years. No question, the types of weapons that we allow relatively easy access to, semi-automatic weapons, they have very limited purpose, and therefore there should be very limited access to them. How we address that, how we address the other side of this weaponry, if you will, the needs of this young man and the needs of so many kids and young folks and even adults that are in his same situation that have the mental crises that they're dealing with, how do we provide the services and supports to these folks as a community, as an educational community, as a state community, to ensure that, again, this doesn't happen again. We don't want to be naive about this, but at the same time, we need to make sure that we are putting the appropriate value on the intervention, on the prevention services that as we move forward can in fact deal with issues like this. But no question, there is the second side of this, and that's the appropriate amount of gun control that needs to be looked at by the state legislature.
And Mary, what do you hear from the schools that you work with as far as the things that they feel they need?
They're really looking back now and saying, are we feeling comfortable and secure? Are we really into, they're rechecking their systems, and they're looking to see that all the things that they know are at hand are actually in place and are being implemented in the way as intended. Sometimes we get a little comfortable and a little relaxed, and then things like this happen, and it kind of brings up our vigilance again to say we need to step back and have this constant kind of review and assessment, and always keep it in front of our mind that we're not sure what may be happening on each day, and that we need to keep in mind the well-being of all of us. The other thing I think that's really important, and we had a meeting here, the administrative staff, with our district superintendent this morning and our counseling staff, is that sometimes we also have to step back and be the caretakers of ourselves, because we are used to being the caretakers and the educators and always handling everything. But things like this can also bring up issues that people may have way back in the recesses of their mind, of some experience that they have had in their past, whether it's been with a violent-related incident or a death or something that they have lived through. And this brings that back up to the surface. And so sometimes we have to watch out for each other, and we have to ensure that we're all in a place that we can be most able to respond in an appropriate manner. And sometimes it's okay to say to a colleague, it's time to step out and take a break for a little while, because we have to also take care of ourselves, or we're not going to be very useful to the young people we work with.
Ken, when it comes to money, we all, you know, look, a lot of people complain about their school taxes and what they pay and what goes into that and buying a new bus and putting the lights up on the football field and all of those things. And we go to the polls and we vote and we talk and we discuss this stuff. But when it comes to issues like this, does that go beyond that, or does it still have to be a huge conversation?
You know, it has to be a critical part of the conversation, because so many districts now are in a position where it's either or. For example, a number of districts over the course of the last few years, as the fiscal picture has become tighter, have asked themselves about whether they should have elementary counselors, elementary guidance counselors, the social service network in general within the schools, and a number of these positions have been cut. And it is ironic that you do see other areas still being valued, and by valued, I mean it sits in the district budget and is voted on in the affirmative by the public. You have things that don't necessarily have that level of impact on children, such as the lights on the football field. And again, that's an extraneous example. You have to ask the question at this point, though, in challenging fiscal times as we sit, as a community, in light of this event, what matters most and how are we valuing it in terms of putting it into our district budget, putting it out, as the Board of Education will do, to the public to say, this is our value statement. We are, in fact, saying what's absolutely important in here. And a district budget that goes out today, and certainly in this year's budget, that doesn't have some type of acknowledgement that we need to make sure that the health, safety, the emotional well-being, the wellness in general of our kids is our first priority, that's problematic in light of this event. And I think you'll see a lot of superintendents, as they go to their budget tables over the course of the next few months, really start to take a hard look at that side of it.
Ken Suntz is Deputy New York State Education Commissioner in the Office of P-12 Education. Mary Granciallo is the Executive Director of the New York State Center for School Safety. Mary and Ken, I thank you very much for sharing with us this morning, and best of luck in your continued efforts, and thank you for the work you've completed. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Joe. And to folks of Newtown, as well, as the President suggested last night, they have reminded us what matters, and that's how we'll go about our work today.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.